This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa.
Welcome to Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempseed. I'm so glad you're joining us today. On today's show, I want to look at what happens if medication and counselling don't work. There are many people that think these are the only two options, and they're very effective for a lot of people. I'll talk about that in a moment. But unfortunately, they don't work for everyone. So we'll look mainly on the show at what can be done if those two things don't work. Well, first of all, let's look at counselling and medication. On the show over the last 4 years, I've had many counsellors in different forms come on the show. And one of the reasons that we recommend counselling for people is that we know it can be really, really effective for some people. Now, unfortunately, no study has found that counselling helps everyone with mental illness. It can work absolutely brilliantly for some people. Some people say it changes their life. It's almost like a miracle. It makes a big difference. For most people, the results aren't quite that spectacular. Most people say it helps quite a bit and they feel a lot better, but maybe it doesn't necessarily fix everything. There are some people that say counselling just does nothing for me, and we'll look at obviously what to do if that's the case a little bit later on. And then sadly there are some people that it seems counselling makes them worse. But the good news is for the majority of people, counselling is actually at least somewhat beneficial, if not extremely beneficial. So we often say to people, go see a counsellor, but we don't explain what a counsellor does. Well, a counsellor or a therapist is someone that you can talk to about whatever's going on, and hopefully they'll give you some strategies to work through this. One of the problems when we become really stressed, when we become really anxious or depressed, or we've got mental illness, is our world can seem to be imploding in on us. It can be very hard to gain perspective, and especially, say, if you've got depression and you're not thinking clearly, often quite small problems can seem absolutely overwhelming. Sometimes we might think, say, if something went wrong at work and we made a bit of a mistake, if you've got depression, that can colour everything. And suddenly that becomes an absolute disaster and you think, I'm the only failure, I'm the only screw up, why am I so useless, why am I such a loser? Potentially, if you go and see a counsellor, they might be able to help you get a bit more perspective on things. And rather than thinking that you're a loser and you're the only one that does this, well, actually, everyone makes mistakes at work, and sooner or later, things go wrong for other people. So a counsellor can be really good to gain some perspective. Sometimes people say it's just really helpful to have someone to talk to and let it all out. Holding on to all this stuff can be really difficult. It's just having someone there that can listen can be a big help. Counselling can also help with things like, say, a fear of flying, and about probably 20% of the population get pretty nervous flying, and probably 3-6% of the population avoid flying so much, they hate it so much that they avoid it. But a counsellor that's probably trained in this could help you with things like turbulence. And a lot of people think that when turbulence hits, that means the plane is going to crash, it's going to be a disaster, and everyone's going to die. Well, there's some good news that no plane has crashed from turbulence since 1966. So modern aviation is incredibly safe. So turbulence might feel uncomfortable, but it's a bit like going over a speed bump in your car. And sure, in your car, if you go over a pothole or a speed bump, it feels a bit uncomfortable and you get a bit of a jolt. But it's not dangerous. And so sometimes, say, a counsellor that's trained these sorts of things could help you work through things like that. So counselling can be absolutely brilliant for some people. A couple of weeks ago, we had Max on the show, and he talked about how medication helped him. And there's a lot of people that think the only thing that antidepressants do is they make young people kill themselves. It's much more complicated than that. Again, some people say medication changes and transforms their lives. And one of the things that we often forget about, say, counselling, is for counselling to work, you actually have to be quite well. You know, you can't talk about what's going on. If you're so depressed, you can't think and you can't get out of bed. So sometimes medication can lift people out of that rut that they're in that bad situation. Now, fair warning that it works brilliantly for some people, pretty well for some other people, does nothing for some people, and there is a very small percentage of people that it does make worse. But again, today doctors recognise this and they talk to people about monitoring this so that we've dramatically reduced the chances of negative side effects. So a lot of people think that counselling and medication are the only two options. They're certainly not, but they do work probably for at least 60 to 80% of the population with mental illness. At least 60 to 80%, particularly with a combination of both. Research seems to show that medication works fairly well on its own, counselling works fairly well on its own. The combination of the two together seems to be, for most people, really, really effective. However, of course, it doesn't work for everyone, and we need to be really open about this. Now, it doesn't mean to say that, you know, if counselling doesn't work for people, they're being difficult, they're not listening, they're not engaging with a person. Sometimes, for whatever reason, it doesn't work. One possible clue that we might have into this is we know that people that have experienced significant childhood trauma, a part of their brain called Broca's area, the language part of their brain, we know that this doesn't work so well. So sometimes people can't just talk about what's going on with them. Sometimes there are other things that need to go on. So there are many ways that you could look at mental illness, but one way that you could look at it is if you've got all these negative emotions inside of you, particularly say if you've got depression or something like that, you can think you're a burden to others, you're a waste of space, you're a loser, everything you do is just totally worthless. And some people with depression even feel guilty that they're alive, that they're breathing oxygen and that they're here. So obviously medication and counselling can be great, but don't worry, there's lots of other options. So I'm just going to go through a few of these other options. The first one that I'd like to talk about today is something called animal-assisted therapy. Can you imagine that if someone has experienced significant abuse and betrayal, particularly by a loved one, how damaging that is? And that won't, in terms of the human brain, you know, if someone really close to us has hurt us, we tend to not think, oh, it was just that one person, other people will be okay. We tend to think everyone I meet is going to hurt me or everyone I know is going to betray me. And this can include therapists or counsellors. So sometimes if people have experienced significant betrayal, a counsellor is actually too big a step. So we have something called animal-assisted therapy. And this can be people that have had a spectacular violation of their trust and humanity. In animal-assisted therapy, it's done with a trained counsellor, but basically someone learns how to look after an animal. So it could be a puppy, it could be a horse, and sometimes, you know, a horse can be quite a big animal and people can be quite scared. So they might learn to carefully approach the horse in a way that makes them feel safe. And little by little, they can start to gain an affinity with the horse. Then they might be able to feed it. Then they might be able to ride it. It doesn't just have to be horses, although a lot of the research is around using horses. But, you know, it could be a puppy, could be a rabbit or something like that. And basically what this does is it teaches them empathy and it teaches them that actually there are some safe creatures. And then hopefully it's thought that, you know, if someone can do that with an animal, maybe they can start to trust a human being. So that's an absolutely fantastic option out there for people that need some more help and they've really been betrayed and they often feel so broken they just can't talk to anyone about it. The next form of therapy that I want to talk about today is ecotherapy. I'm reading a fantastic book at the moment called The Nature Fix by Florence Williams. And I didn't know there was so much research out there, but there is a heck of a lot of research that shows that walking in nature, say along a beach, can be really, really helpful for some people. I'll just give you a quick summary of some of the findings. But what researchers have found is that exercise is obviously helpful for you. I think we all know that. But researchers have found, say, walking in a forest helps you reduce your levels of cortisol, that's the stress hormone that activates the fight, flight, faint and freeze mechanism. You actually have a lot less of this if you walk in a forest as opposed to, say, a city. And so there are many, many findings that show that walking in nature can be incredibly therapeutic for people. There's another part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex, and that's your thinking part of the brain. And one theory around depression and a lot of mental illness is that people are worn out. We've got too much thinking to do in the modern world. In fact, it's thought that the number of people that we know today is more than people in the Middle Ages might know in an entire lifetime. Can you imagine how difficult that is to keep all this information about people, all these connections, and then you've got infernal emails that keep coming at you, and the modern world is too stressful. I don't want to say people can't cope. I think the human brain is not designed for this level of complexity and information. One of the other things that we found about, say, walking in a forest is it seems to switch off the prefrontal cortex, and it actually gives your brain a bit of a chance to relax and calm down. And one of the problems today is that people seem to be on 24/7. There are so many people that seem to have tremendous trouble relaxing. So the book is absolutely fantastic. There's another form of therapy called ecotherapy, which basically helps people take walks in forests and along a beach and things like that. And the good news is that this doesn't have to be like a week-long trip. There is evidence that, say, even a half-hour walk, it doesn't have to be a complex hike or something like that, but even a slow, gentle walk through a forest or along a beach seems to be really therapeutic and really helpful for some people. So that's one thing that can make a big difference. Another form of therapy is something called EMDR, and that stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. Now, a lot of people are really sceptical about this, but there's an incredible body of research behind this that says it seems to work. We know that for a lot of people, say, if they've experienced trauma, talking about this is actually quite harmful. It re-triggers people, it activates the fight, flight, faint or freeze mechanism. And sometimes explicitly talking about trauma actually makes things a lot worse for people. Well, what researchers have found is that effectively moving or having a therapist move their fingers in front of your eyes seems to allow people to talk about trauma in a way that helps them calm down. And I know this sounds like some crazy theory, but one of the theories behind it is that when you move something across your eyes, that replicates a part of sleep called rapid eye movement. If you don't know, there's a phase of sleep called REM or rapid eye movement. And you don't actually close your eyes during that. Your eyes open and close very quickly. And what researchers have found is that that is the phase of sleep where you consolidate all your memories from the previous day. And one of the problems with, say, PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder is that people can't seem to consolidate these memories. The problem with PTSD is people can't think about the event or the trauma as something that happened in the past. Their brain relives it in the moment. And so even if, say, someone experienced childhood abuse 30 or 40 years ago, if they've got PTSD, those thoughts, feelings and emotions come back to them, and it's like reliving it over and over again. And there are some theories that say that people with PTSD, they don't get good REM sleep, and so they can't basically process these memories into a way that their brain puts it in the past. Scientists aren't completely sure why EMDR works, but one of the theories behind it is that it actually simulates the process of sleep where you consolidate your memories, and you can put them from an active, anxious part of your brain to a safer part of the brain where it's looked at in the past. Now, I need to be very clear here. EMDR does not help people forget, so you can't erase the memories as such, but it seems to be able to put them into a part of the brain where you can obviously think about it, but it doesn't seem to trigger these intense emotional reactions that a lot of people with PTSD have. So that seems to be something that's really effective for a lot of people. The next thing is either drama therapy, music therapy, or art therapy. And as I've said, for many people, it's very difficult to talk about some of the things that are going on in their lives. It's not so easy to just express these emotions. But a lot of people can do this through, say, music. It doesn't matter if you're not the greatest musician in the world, but being able to, even tap things out on some drums or something like that, write a song if you're talented like that, Basically, it's a way to get these negative emotions and these negative feelings out of you and into something else. The same with, say, art therapy. There's several different forms of this, and some are simpler than others. But one form of art therapy is to try and express what's going on for you through the medium of paint or sculpture or something like that. So, for example, if someone's full of anger and rage, or they're upset with a person that's hurt them, it doesn't have to be pictures or anything like that, but they might draw black or red or something over there. And there seems to be something about this process of getting this out of your body and into something where you can see it, seems to help people move from a place where these feelings are incredibly intense, very strong, to be able to process this and move through this. Now, this is usually done with a therapist, but it's something that can help a lot of people. And the same with drama therapy. Some people find that acting things out can be really helpful. Now, you don't have to be brilliant at acting, and they've, say, tried this in prisons, and most people think, I don't want to be here, I'm no good at this. People talk about when people start these groups, most people sit with their arms crossed, looking down, thinking, I don't want to be here. Many people would rather have a root canal than do this. And so this is done again with a trained therapist, and it's done very slowly and very carefully. And sometimes people will just do something really simple to start off with, and they might just do something for 10, 20 seconds and slowly build up the confidence. Then maybe, eventually they'd work up to creating a short play where they get to express some of these emotions. And there's a strong research basis that shows that that could be really helpful for some people. Another form of therapy that's been used, mainly with children, but there's some really good evidence this could also work with adults, is what's called play therapy. Now, this is not just playing with toys. Again, this does need to be done with a trained therapist who has training on top of this to do play therapy. But play therapy can involve things like using toys and models to express what's happened. So, for example, the concept of death is really difficult for children to process and understand. Even adults really struggle to understand the finality of death. And so often if children have experienced the death of someone close to them, they don't know what to do with these emotions. You know, usually you can't talk to a young child and say, are you having an existential crisis? So one of the theories behind play therapy is that, say, if there was a little box that was a coffin, maybe there was a toy doll or something that represents someone that died, being able to explore these emotions very carefully can be really helpful. And again, this must be done with a trained therapist. There is evidence that, say, using anatomically correct dolls and figures, particularly if people have experienced sexual abuse, is often harmful and often makes things worse. So there is some provisos around the sorts of toys and things that are chosen. But it seems to be a way to visually show what's happened. And a lot of people find that if they can see what's actually happening, that can be really helpful. So all the things that I've just talked about, music, drama, art, and play therapy, these are things that can help people visually express what's been going on. I know for a lot of people that have lost a friend, they don't know what to do, and they're really sort of stuck with this memory of the friend, and sometimes they're worried that they'll lose the memory of the friend, and they don't know what to do about this. So for some people, creating a type of sculpture to honour that person, and as a way of you doing something to honour that person. Like, after a death, a lot of people say, what can I do to help? And often there's actually nothing that you can do. So a lot of people feel really powerless. But maybe creating a sculpture is a way to empower people. It gives them something to do, and it's a way to honour that person. Now, again, you don't have to be the world's greatest sculptor. You don't have to be Michelangelo or anything like that. But some people find, it could be out of just sticks and leaves. Some people have a sort of transient sculpture that's not meant to last. Other people create things that they want to last for the rest of their lives. And again, there seems to be something about getting these negative emotions out of you and into something positive is really helpful. And to do all these things, especially drama therapy, art therapy, you don't have to be the world's greatest artist or actor or anything like that. It's about expressing what's going on for you And for a lot of these things, if you don't want to show this to anyone else, that's also absolutely fine. You don't have to put it on display in an art gallery or anything like that. Some people want to keep this and make it something very personal and very private. Earlier this year, we had Jackie talk about neurofeedback. And again, that has had quite a checkered history in terms of the psychological research. And a lot of people think it's a form of quackery. But actually, there's really strong evidence, and Jackie talked about this, that basically what it does is it connects an EEG machine that reads your brain waves, and then it projects them onto the screen, but not in an abstract way, often in pictures and things like that. And people learn to respond to their brain waves. And for some people, that seems to be really helpful, because a lot of people might feel angry and upset, but they don't necessarily realize that they're feeling angry or upset. So there seems to be something about helping people visually understand what's going on in their brain, seeing it on screen and being able to respond to that, that can be really helpful. Another fantastic thing is something called expressive writing. So being able to write down for people what's going on. And again, you don't have to be a novelist, you don't have to be able to spell, you don't have to have neat handwriting. But a lot of people find just simply writing down whatever's going on for them. This works especially well if people are really stressed. You know, if you're so overwhelmed at work, you've got so many things on, then you've got to plan a holiday, then you've got to do all this stuff. If you keep it in your brain, it can just seem absolutely overwhelming and tremendously frustrating for a lot of people. So what expressive writing does is simply take all these emotions and it puts it down, you write it down, whatever's on your mind, don't think about it too much, don't worry about spelling. Just get these thoughts out of your head. And I've seen a lot of people that were really skeptical about trying this. And they tried it and they said, wow, you know, it was just so amazing to be able to see when I was stressed, why I was stressed, and I can now actually see it in front of me. And a lot of people, not everyone of course, but a lot of people say when they did that, it gave them a sense of perspective. And some people thought, you know, they were getting all upset over nothing, and then they actually realized, oh, actually I do have a lot going on. Or some people, you know, could see that actually maybe it wasn't such a big deal. But I think there's something about being able to visually see things, and some of the forms of help that I've talked about, they allow people to visually see things. Because one of the big problems with negative emotions is they're quite abstract. You know, how do you actually draw depression? I mean, yeah, you can draw the colour black and things like that, but that doesn't really show it. How do you draw anxiety? You know, you can show a picture of someone looking terrified, but I still don't think that fully covers it. So all these forms of therapy help people to express this. So the big message that I want to give people today is that, you know, if you've tried one form of help and it hasn't worked, then don't worry, there'll be plenty of other things out there. The final thought that I want to leave you with is, on the show I've asked many, many people with mental illness, if you had one bit of advice for someone going through a mental illness, what would it be? And person after person has told me on the show, I wished I knew I could change counsellors or doctors. And I think a takeaway message from that is, you know, if counselling and medication isn't working, then try something else. Now, give this a bit of time. You know, medication often takes 4 to 6 weeks to really show a strong sign of effectiveness. Counselling probably takes at least a few sessions before you get into it. So give these things a bit of time. But, you know, if you've been trying this for, say, 6 months and there's been no change, you feel worse, then you do have the right to change, or you could try one of these other forms of therapy. Thank you so much for listening. Please look after yourselves. And if you are a listener, spread the message of hope. Because I meet too many people that ask me, do people ever get better from mental illness? And the answer is yes, yes they do. I think it's an exciting time to be alive, because we're developing new and exciting treatments all the time, and there is tremendous hope. That's why I should call this show Lighthouse of Hope, because I want people to have that hope. And to my listeners out there, you can share that hope with people by telling them that if things do go wrong, it doesn't have to be the end. There are so many options and so many different forms of help. Thank you so much for listening. Look after yourselves.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home.